Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Cyberpunk Uncensored.
Hello, Gatos. This is Cyber Smiley with my co-host.
Wisdom. Greetings, programs. How are you guys doing this week?
And welcome to another episode of Tales from the Forlorn Dopes, brought to you by Cyberpunk Uncensored and Rob Mulligan. So this episode, we're going to try to get into a little bit of game theory, specifically around stats, how to use them, what we use them for, any special rules we might have done, and talk about, you know, what we think about, like, modify them, because we got into a kind of discussion around empathy and what empathy represents. So we figured we could probably talk you all of your ears off for a few hours on our stance on stats and how to use them. But before we get started, just to give you guys some updates, I'm still working a little bit on my site. I know I haven't done any posts out yet. I think it's been a few weeks. Right now I'm doing a ability to do some conversions from my Cyberpunk 2020 generator get it converted into Interalloc Unlimited. So right now I'm working on the skill section and trying to figure out how to do that conversion back and forth between the two sheets. So that's one thing to look forward to. Other Cyberpunk related stuff. So I'm continuing to run my game. I know, Wisdom, you have your game that you're running.
Kinda.
Well, I can tell you right now, my game, the previous, session, I would say, the team did a major infiltration into a facility, and whatever could go wrong, I think, did. They achieved one of their objectives, but not all of it, and right now they're on the lam. So it's going to be fun to see what's going to happen to them and how they deal with the fallout from a kind of a botched run.
Yeah, my game has, I don't know, the forces of the universe are conspiring against me. And we haven't actually played in like a month, because every week, like something is bogging down and... it's slow going at this point.
Well, so let's get into it. Stats. The wonderful world of stats in Cyberpunk 2020. Some of the conversions that our Talsorian kind of has done with the system. Right, in which they've added dex, kind of removed attractiveness. And did a few other things, like adding willpower as well. So, I guess what we can start off with is kind of our discussion on empathy and what empathy really means in game versus what it means, or the dynamics around it, right? So the concept of empathy really is just how you interact with people, and how well you can persuade them, influence them, seduce them, and change,
all that good stuff.
Change their opinions. And I think we kind of touched on the subject of, well, you know, fine, empathy reduces your humanity, which is kind of brings you into either slowly
the other way around.
Well,
yeah.
The concept that the lower your humanity, the lower your empathy, the lower your empathy, the more psychotic you become.
Yeah. They want to treat empathy as both a charisma stat and a sanity stat, and I don't necessarily think that. I don't necessarily think that's the way to go. I came to this after the discussions we had where, like a couple of episodes ago, where we were talking about cyberpsychosis and its effects, and yeah, I don't think necessarily that like empathy should be lowered because you're going nuts. I mean sociopaths are nuts. They can be. I've actually known some sociopaths who were fairly functioning members of society, and they're sane to the extent that, you know, what they do is logical and follows, you know, motivations and whatnot, as opposed to, you know, just random acts of nuttiness. But
right.
And that's at the same time, like a sociopath would have they don't have a connection to the humanity aspect. Like that's what makes them a sociopath. But at the same time, like everyone that I've ever known is a highly charismatic individual because they know how to they learn how to manipulate through other people's humanity, I guess, is the way I want to put it. I'm putting this very, very poorly, and I apologize if I'm offending anybody.
Our audience is small right now, but I'm sure when this goes to the YouTubes, it might get a little more.
I'm trying not to be offensive, and I'm failing because I know that like it's a problem that people, like real people, fucking struggle with. It's not anything like that. I'm trying not to make light of it or misrepresent it, but. The fact is what the game considers to be empathy and a high empathy and a low empathy, like a sociopath would fall on the low empathy scale of the rule system, but still have a very high charisma, which is where the like skills that are tied into empathy fall.
Yep.
So it's, that's what I'm trying to get at.
And I know Wisdom, you're FYI to everyone, Wisdom can't see chat. His internet's down, so he's
yeah, I apologize about that, guys.
Joining by phone.
Company is local, and I'm just doing it over the phone.
Yeah, so digital craze sees less empathy the more psychotic you become. And, you know, I think there's a difference between being charismatic and being psychotic, because Ted Bundy was very charismatic, but he was also very psychotic. Same with Manson. Yeah. Not so much with Dahmer and a few other of the, you know, the various killers. But I think... And again, the mechanics within the game, right, and how it's being used is the more cyberware you get, the less attached to humans you become. Or less attached or disassociate yourselves with people in general.
The way I'm thinking of going with this is... to have humanity be a derived stat as it is now, like it's based off of your empathy, but it's then treated separately. Like cybernetics takes away from your empathy itself, but it doesn't affect your, or takes away from your humanity, but it I'm thinking about making it not affect your empathy. Once the characters roll, they're two separate things.
Right. But I can see, you know, I think, and again, I think what we're thinking about when we talk about real, you know, real sociopaths and real psychopaths, and they are born with, some of them are born with a good charisma, some of them aren't. And I think the game, I don't know if the game kind of, it's weird, right? Because they put in this game mechanic that basically is to limit how much cyberware you get and also show the deterioration of a human becoming more and more machine and how that affects relationships with people, right? So, I mean, I'm kind of on two sides. One, yes, I can see charisma being influential, but so you could think about charisma being maybe a combination of empathy and cool, right?
See, and that was the second part of how I would have it work is have your humanity affect cool will, like, yeah, cool will saves.
Right,
but I need to put more thought into that.
Because I can see the, and again, we're applying the game mechanic of I'm starting to lose my humanity and I'm becoming less and less caring about other people around me, which means I'm going to be more agitated when people around me are do something I find offensive. So I'm going to snap at them, and I can see that kind of lowering your interaction with people. But when you're
in addition to like your ability to interact with other people, I think it also limits your ability to interact with yourself as a human being. Like you start thinking of yourself as this invulnerable thing, this more than human, not bound by the limitations of the flesh.
Right.
Which again, as you were saying, you grow frustrated easily. You are prone to losing it, really. Mm-hmm. Like just, yeah.
So you could come up with, like, and this coming off the fly, you know, again, that would need to be game tested and whether or not players want to roll additional dice. But when they have to use like a social skill, whether it's seduction, social, fast talk, persuasion, and they're really borderline psychotic, right? Empathy of 2, 3, even lower. They have to make a cool roll to keep their normal level of empathy. You know,
that's a good idea.
Or else they use the lower, right, and take that penalty because they fly off the handle, right? Instead of, okay, I'm going to try to seduce her, but she does something that really just, I hate meet people doing that, and I just fly off the handle or say something.
The lower your humanity, the higher a chance of you having a psychotic break.
Yeah.
Like it could last, it doesn't have to be like a permanent thing, but like for an hour or so, you fucking lose it. You have, for lack of a better term, you get super frustrated and have a temper tantrum.
Yep.
As anybody who's ever been hangry can attest, can be a very real problem. Every Snickers commercial for the last 2 years.
Jiggle Craze says he would use either the Cyrus Trip expansion for 2020 or make his own. I do not have the Cyrus Trip adventure.
I've got it. It's not one of the better known of the Ionis supplements, but it was pretty good.
Was it Ionis or Atlantis?
Atlantis? Or Atlas?
Atlas, sorry.
It might have been Atlas. For some reason, I thought it was Ionis. just because I can see the cover in my head, but I'll be able to tell you in just a second.
To me, if you look at it and if it has purple on it, then it's Iannis.
Yeah.
But yeah, Iannis kind of got into the whole psychosis and the various levels of it. I tried implementing it with some players, but they were like, "This is too much."
It was Atlas.
Yeah,
but it's got purple all over the cover, which is where my confusion came from in my brain.
So yeah, I mean, and that's kind of a difficult stat, right? And how to play that. Now, I mean, again, the quickest, easiest solution is just okay, charisma. Right, create a new stat, keep them different. Empathy is how well you relate. Maybe there's a combination stat that you would convert or combine the two stats to come up with your target number, or not your target number, but your bonus to the D10. But yeah, it just. But I'm wondering if you would also consider the skill itself, the charisma aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
Because the higher the skill goes.
And, I don't know. It's it's hard to codify the width and breadth of sanity. Like the Dark Metropolis source book, they did a great job of introducing insanity rules, but like sanity itself is a harder thing to like pin down, because it's more than just charisma. It's more than just empathy. It's maybe a separate sanity stat is called for.
Kind of like Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, kind of like Call of Cthulhu. They understand sanity and insanity. Like they do that shit right. I wouldn't want to do a straight thing. The other problem is I really like the elegance of 9 stats. But that's just a personal, like, old school, like, I don't like change kind of thing. Which is hilarious because we're talking about making changes. But, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, things like that and just reevaluating kind of that stat is definitely a lot of game theory, and you also want to you want to put in some rules that make a little more sense, but you also want to make the playability not get overburdened.
You don't want one more thing to have to keep track of, and I get that. I don't want one more thing to have to keep track of, and I love keeping track of shit. But at the same time, I feel like it's kind of necessary. I like the mechanic of cyberpsychosis. I like the mechanic of, you know, trading humanity for an edge. But at the same time, you shouldn't have to, like, it shouldn't affect. It shouldn't affect your ability to at least fake empathy. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't have any empathy, you should be able to fake it, which is what clinically, according to the rules, like sociopaths, that's their shtick, is they fake empathy.
And the majority of sociopaths are very manipulative.
I mean, they have to. It's part of their own coping and survival mechanism.
Yep.
I mean, they learn. If you have no real connection to anyone, then you would learn pretty quick that, hey, if I act nice, I get the cookie.
Yep.
If I act nice to that guy, he might give me his cookie too. Or at least, if I act nice to the teacher, I don't get in trouble. I don't know. It's manipulation is a real skill, and it's tied to empathy, and that needs to be reflected. Like, mm-hmm. You need to be able to play, or at least have sociopathic characters in the game who can still make use of those skills. I don't know really how else to apply this other than just completely separate the humanity from empathy.
Or removing sanity.
Or you could say maybe with the loss of humanity, you still have access to those skills under empathy, but instead of empathy, they become intelligence-based skills.
Yep.
I don't know. That seems kind of cheaty, but...
Yeah. And I think cool would be more appropriate, right? Because cool kind of reflects your style, your machismo.
Yeah, you know. That makes sense. Yeah, this is a very disorganized episode. We're just kind of spitballing here and inviting you guys to come along with us on this journey of how we
digital craze says
consensus.
How he addresses a lot of the humanity loss is and making players fear humanity loss. They really don't embrace cyberware. That he actually is doing more like the various tech and just adding it to yourself, so you don't have that intrusion into your bodies. So like Power Ranger suits and things like that, in which he addresses, or she,
Power Ranger,
just uses additional tech outside of your body, and that way you don't have that loss anymore.
And honestly, I think that's what most people would do. Like, my personal characters very rarely get cybernetics, and most of the cybernetics they do get are replacement parts for shit that gets blown off.
Right.
At that point, yeah, the options come in. If I've got to have a cyber arm, well, it's going to be top of the line with all the bells and whistles. If you shoot out my eyeball, it's not just going to be an eye. It's going to do all sorts of stuff. But before then, yeah, I've got smart goggles. I've got battle gloves, all sorts of advanced tech on my body to basically mimic the effects of cybernetics.
Right.
I mean, that makes more sense. In my game, it's also like cybernetics are much cheaper, much, much cheaper than like cloned body parts. The idea that cloned body parts are cheaper in the game, in the core Cyberpunk 2020 rules, and anybody would ever go with cybernetics makes no sense to me whatsoever. Because as cool as cybernetics are, like, they're not going to be able to like perfectly replicate the tactile sensation that a meat part would have. Plus, if you look at it realistically, there's always the chance of like your body rejecting it. Like, that's something that I think should have been represented as well. Like, your body rejecting cybernetics, maintenance, things like that. I think those ideas are shortchanged in the core rules, and they should be looked at. Maybe that's the subject of a future episode. I don't know. I don't mean to be getting off topic here, but
right. Well, I mean, if you think about, and again, this we're talking about a derived stat and the game mechanic to control the limitations of cyberware, right? Shadowrun had what, Essence? I think they had it, which more cyberware.
I couldn't tell you. I've never actually played Shadowrun.
Well, I played it many years ago, but basically, you had a set essence, which I think was set to a specific number depending upon the race you had. So everyone had the same essence. So I have a six, you have a six, and the more cyberware you get. What did it
represent? Oh, okay.
It was humanity, right? It was a limitation on how much cyberware you can have. The concept behind Shadowrun was that it wasn't really eating away your humanity, but, well, it was eating away your humanity, but it was eating away your soul, really.
Because, that makes sense.
Because, you know, Shadowrun had that magic aspect to it, so souls and spirits.
Yeah, they tried to tie, from what I can tell of Shadowrun's magic, they tried to tie it, they took a really, like, holistic view of magic, from what I understood. Like I said, I've never played it, I've read through a lot of the source books, or at least some of the adventure books, and it always seemed to me, like, especially from the art, that the magic took a really holistic, like, indigenous people's type of view of magic.
Right.
That could have just been a stylistic thing with the art, but that was the impression I always got.
Right. Just to add to this conversation, so I'm opened up Cyberpunk Red, and the description for empathy is your ability to relate to and care for others, and take others into consideration, particularly important as it offsets the effects of cyberpsychosis. And it's interesting that when I read cool, it says your ability to impress and influence people through your character and charisma, how well you get along with others, and how you interact in social situations. So
I
that description,
because that does not tie into how I viewed cool ever.
Well, it also doesn't tie into some of the skills.
No, it doesn't. Like, cool is your ability to maintain your calm under pressure. Like, that's how I've always viewed that.
Right. So, like, persuasion in red is cool. Human perception is empathy. Conversation is empathy, which I don't know if I would.
Yeah, there's so many redundancies with red. I'm not talking bad about it. There's just a lot of skills that overlap each other.
And it looks like empathy only has two skills associated with it, which are human perception, which kind of makes sense, right? And conversation. But even human perception, you could say, put it up towards an intelligence, you know? Because it's a combination, I think, of intelligence and empathy. Right? You know what telltale signs you're looking for, and empathy is kind of how you read a person.
The skills for Red, like the way the character sheet, I'm looking at just the basic character sheet that came out, and like, I get what they were trying to do, but I preferred the Cyberpunk 2020 way where it was divided up by stat.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's conversation and human perception. That's human perception being an M skill, yes, absolutely. Conversation, sure.
Yeah, so they.
Jesus.
It's a little different than 2020. Maybe they took what we're talking about into consideration of, hey, someone who's who is a serial killer, they can fast talk and persuade a lot better, and you know, it doesn't offset. So,
you know, you might be right about that. It's I need to take a closer look at these, at the red skills, but well, when I did not realize there were only two empathy-based skills.
When you run red the one and only time, you know, you learn them. So, I don't know how much longer you want to talk about this particular stat, or get into some of the other stats.
I mean, I could continue talking about this stat and for hours while trying to think of how to cover it in the future if I update Interlock Unlimited, which, I mean, I've been putting stuff on the back burner for that for a couple of years now, but this is like the first major change that would come along. Well, as far as other stats, I know red removed attractiveness as a stat, and I understand the viewpoint on that. I still think it would be important to have attractiveness as a stat. I don't think you need to tie those skills into it. Like, I don't know where you would put the personal grooming and wardrobe and style skill. I'm sure cool would be a suitable replacement for attractiveness, but I do think there needs to be like a notation somewhere of, you know, just how physically attractive the character is, because that's actually important. Sure, you can choose. I don't mind the idea of letting the players choose how physically attractive their character is. Does it need to have skills attached to it? No, not necessarily. But yeah, it should be there in one way or another. I know in Cyberpunk you can make your character more attractive or less attractive as you see fit, but that's dependent. Like, making yourself more attractive is going to be very dependent on how much money you have.
Right. Well, I mean, so if we think about like other game systems, I know D&D way back tried to create kind of a stat for physical beauty, right, which was comeliness, that survived not very long because it was
like one edition, sadly.
Yeah, it came out late in second for first edition. And then you have something like Vampire the Masquerade, and this was back in first edition of that game. I think the attractiveness was actually a bane or a boon. So you would actually buy it with points to have that attribute, right? He is good looking, or he is ugly, so he gets more points. Which I thought was, and I think Fusion, and again, I don't, last time I read Fusion was probably over a decade ago.
The Bubblegum Crisis books was the last time I actually read Fusion.
And I think Fusion kind of had that same way of tackling it, yeah, in which you spent points to be attractive, which gave you a bonus to some of your social skills. So,
yeah, I don't know what points you would spend, but that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I know with Interlock Unlimited, or at least with the games that I run, regardless of whether it's Interlock Unlimited, Classic, Cyberpunk, or whatever, I've removed luck from one of the stats that you use your starting points on, or that you roll on, and it's now its own separate roll. Like, once you've figured out everything else, then you roll for luck. I can see doing something like that with
attractiveness.
Like, hey, you know, or just letting someone decide, because I don't care if you're attractive or not. In some things it'll provide you an advantage. In other things, I mean, being a pretty character isn't always going to be an advantage. It means people remember your face. It means, like, if you're really pretty, like, people look at you like, well, he's never done any real work in his life. He doesn't know how to fight because his face isn't all fucked up. Like,
yep. And you get into the kind of real world of Forge, and I don't know how true this is. I know people say it, but some very attractive people have always said that they aren't very approachable by people, and people always just seem very timid to start up a conversation with them, which I find interesting.
I mean, it can, like, yeah, attractiveness can be its own curse. It's not one that I've ever been afflicted with, but I can see it happening. Like, I've known some very pretty, like, physically attractive people who, you know, suffered depression and anxiety because people only saw them for, you know, their physical appearance. It's like, who's that chick that played Winnie on,
The Wonder Years?
On The Wonder Years. Like, that chick is a freaking genius. She's like a math savant. And nobody ever took her seriously because of how attractive she was.
Yep.
So yeah, that can be its own curse. I remember, like, when Leonardo DiCaprio first started out and he first started doing movies, everybody dismissed him as nothing but a pretty boy. And, like, I had seen him in This Boy's Life and Gilbert Grape and was like, wow, that kid can actually act. And then he did Titanic and it went back to, well, he's a fucking pretty boy.
Yep.
And it took some major doing on his part before people started giving him his due as an actor.
Well, even before Titanic with, what was it, Basketball Diaries?
Yep. I mean, shit, he was showing his acting chops almost from the very beginning. Like, yeah. I mean, his growing pain stint. There's only so much you can do when you're stuck with Kirk Cameron, but... but yeah, he's it was a long, hard climb for him, regardless of how pretty he was, to be taken seriously. He was going to be successful because he was a pretty dude.
Yep.
But for him to be, like, taken seriously as an actor, he had to break away from the Titanic and Romeo and Juliet mold, like, stop being seen as this, like, teen idol. And, you know, that kind of typecasting, like, that's been a major complaint in Hollywood for years. Usually it's just by playing type, but a lot of the times it's by being, hey, I'm this sex symbol. Look at all the Disney girls who, like, in order to try and break out from their on this pretty little innocent Disney girl, so I'm going to, like, start doing drugs and, like, acting like a nutbag trying to break out of that.
Yep. And then being...
And the struggle that they face.
Being very... promiscuous, and or at least,
I mean,
selling that as their ability. But you also have, like, the reverse of it, which is, you know, lower attractiveness. You're definitely not going to have as many people coming up to you and talking to you or interacting with you.
Yeah, if the lower your attractiveness, the more you're going to rely on that on your charisma. Like, I mean, I'm a chud in real life. I have to be fairly friendly to people. people like Danny DeVito, who's, I mean, the dude's a little troll. I love him. He's one of my favorite actors on the planet, but he is not a physically attractive man. Yep. And But he has worked his charisma to the point that I would watch him in anything.
Right.
This has gone off on a weird tangent of me just listing like attractive and ugly characters in Hollywood. And I apologize for that. That's not really where I was trying to take this. Just
right. So with attractiveness, right, that kind of was dropped in Red. And two new stats were created, the will and dex. So, and I kind of...
Dex was their attempt to break up reflexes. So reflex isn't the end-all be-all stat. And I understand the reasoning behind it. Because everybody wants to be the cool guy with the fast gunslinging skills and all that. I don't think it necessarily does that, though.
Right.
Well,
looking at, the skill base, it kind of looks like range weapons are reflex, whereas hand-to-hand is dex. If I'm reading that.
Yeah. Right. That's how I'm seeing it.
So they kind of tried to split up combat into two specialties, right? Long range versus short range.
I mean, I don't really see... I guess they're trying to say that reflex is hand-eye coordination, and then dex is fast twitch muscle memory. Mm-hmm. But really, aren't those the same thing at the end of the day? I don't know.
Well, the description
it's
is...
It's a philosophy I've struggled with since Fusion, basically.
Yeah, so... The description is your response time and coordinate... represents your response time and coordination. Most importantly, the stat affects ability to hit things with range weapons. Versus dex is your overall physical... Competence? Okay, competence as it pertains to balance, leaping, jumping, combat, and other athletic activities.
I can get that, but it seems like they're trying to... blur the line between reflexes and body.
Well, it's confusing, right? Because in one statement for dexterity, they say it pertains to your balance, leaping, jumping, right? Leaping and jumping.
Yeah.
Move. What does move do? It affects your running, leaping, and jumping. So, you know, there's definitely some overlap to that, which I guess kind of makes sense. But yeah, I think they're trying to split off the skill base into a little more varied skills and what stats you use, which for me kind of complicates the game a little more.
Even with the 2020 list, attractiveness gets two skills added to it. Move gets zero. Luck gets zero. Which kind of is... It throws out the mechanic to have them as stats, but they're important enough and separate enough that you need to represent them somehow.
Yeah. Capricious Nature believes he thinks it was a good idea to separate dex and reflex.
I can see that.
But I mean, if they're doing that with reflex and dex, shouldn't they be doing body and splitting that into strength and constitution, right? Just because you're strong doesn't mean you can resist wounds better, and vice versa, right?
Well, I mean, with IU, I mean, strength is at its very basic, most simple explanation, body is just your physical strength, but it's also like your muscle density, I guess, your physical density. So it's a weird stat in the things that it represents. Like the skills that it gets added to are on the surface they make sense, but then you get into things like you said, like your ability to soak up damage. And like, I don't know that a person who's like toned and muscled is really going to be able to take any more physical damage than somebody who's doughy and fat.
Yep. And they've proven that, or some study or some victims of stab wounds, the only reason why some of the guys who've been stabbed multiple times was because they were on the chunky side. They wouldn't have survived it if they weighed like 50 pounds less.
More cushion for the stabbing. That's what it is. Yeah, because if you're lean and toned and in shape, like the knife just goes straight to your organs. Whereas if you got some weight behind you, you know, stabby stabby through the fat.
Yep.
So maybe body needs to be broken up into, you know, physical fitness and like just overall density. I don't know how else to put that. As a fat dude, I do not want to see like a scale of skinny and fat, but at the same time, like it would make a difference. Yeah. Like if you actually look at like tough man contests and stuff like that, or like guys in the who train to like SCA guys who like actually do like sword fighting and shit, like it's not the super toned little guys that dominate. It's the dudes like the mountain who are kind of fat, but at the same time, like their arms are like tree trunks.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the Schwarzenegger types who win those things. Right. Although at the same time, Lou Ferrigno's been competing in that shit for like 40 years, and he always does fantastic at it. Even it, I don't know if he still does it, but I was seeing him do it like 10 years ago, and he was still like placing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you definitely see some of these bodybuilders. Yeah, they're in their older age, they're a little smaller, but that doesn't mean they're not as fit. You know, they just reduce their body mass. But yeah, so for me, you know, the whole conversion and the streamlining of stats, I think Red kind of went the opposite direction of what I would have done. I have thought about it, and I actually would have reduced the stats even more. I would have dropped move. I would have dropped attractiveness as stats. I would have made them kind of derived stats for like move, right? So for me,
thinking
reflex and body would set the move stat or the derived stat of move, right? For attractiveness, it would be possibly a combination of empathy and cool, and make a derived stat off of that, whether it's an average of it or not.
If I update, or when I update Interlock Unlimited again, just a whole, you're having the prime stats, and like you said, removing move and attractiveness and luck from the prime stats, and then having like secondary stats, which would be attractiveness, move, luck, and sanity, or humanity, as it were, as secondary stats, not that are derived from the primary stats, but are not, but are no longer attached to them. Like once you figure out the number, they're their own thing. I think that would be the way to do that, and then maybe, you know, add in dexterity, add in other things. Like I'm still looking at it and trying to figure it out.
Right.
But the more we talk about this, the more ideas I'm getting for how I would like to handle things in the future and future updates to the rules that I use.
Yeah. And I mean, I like your idea of the certain stats you roll outside of, you know, the point value, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's given a certain amount of points. You apply it to these stats, and then these stats you would have to roll on after the fact. Like luck, I think, is the main one you talked about, but even getting into attractiveness.
Yeah. I mean, it's luck. It should just be a luck of the die what you get. Like, it shouldn't be... You shouldn't have to like negotiate your other skills to decide how much luck you have.
Right.
It makes a more interesting experience.
And to me, it also alleviates the what are they called? The throwaway stats, the dump stats, right? Which I've always had a problem with throughout. Right. Some people decide, okay, I'm not gonna put any points in the lock, and I'm gonna put it all into intelligence and reflex, and get my big cash and my all my pickup skills from it. And even
that all together.
Yeah, and even move is one of those stats that is a dump stat, right? Because they're like, okay, yep, I'll take that hit, and I will go off and get cyber legs with speeding bullet, and I'm all set now.
Yeah, I love that idea. I also, if you really want to do that, if you really want to get some cybernetic, like, speed boosting legs, I mean, that shit is not fucking cheap. So, I guess characters can be all like, well, I'll sell out to a corporation. I'm like, do you really want to sell out for that much? 'Cause, also, I don't make that available for every game that I run. Like, it's just not feasible.
Yeah, and sell out for those who are listening. Do not, if you're using either system, for me, all the players have to agree to sell out, or none of them get to sell out. Because that, unless one of the players is the corp, who's running this ragtag band of bandits, but... Yeah, for me, sellout is a little... It's definitely...
I tend to run very thematic games and campaigns where the characters are all either nomads or they're in the military or they're all street gang members. Sometimes selling out is an option. Most of the time, it's not. Like, if you're playing a nomad, selling out is not an option. There's nobody you're going to be able to sell out to that gives a fuck about you. If you're playing a military character, sure, you sell out to that corporation. Same with the police. Like, sell your soul to the police, go ahead. But that option at that point is, yes, available to all the players. They don't all have to take it, but it's available to them. Honestly, though, it's just not an option most of my players ever take up. Most of the players I've had, like, try to hold on to their humanity and, like, keep cybernetics at bay as long as possible.
Yep.
Yeah. And I've had characters who have gone full conversion, but that's only after, like, extensive play and, like, they take major damage.
Yeah. The one thing that I saw in Interlock Unlimited, which I found was kind of clever use of the stat, was how you took the derived stats of like a death save versus a stun save, whereas a stun save is based off of your cool and not your body, and the death save, of course, is still based off of your body.
That made much more sense to me.
Yeah, because especially with how 2020 wrote or applied cool, right?
Yeah.
And what it represented within the game. And I think with Red, they took that, the old aspect of cool, and kind of separated out between cool and will, and kind of made cool more blended into attractiveness and empathy. So I think granted, Red doesn't have stun saves anymore, which I think is a little lacking. Which was always a fun aspect of combat.
Mechanically, Red kind of goes in a completely different direction than 2020 does. Like, the rules look the same on the surface, the skills look very similar, but the way they're applied and the end result of them are really two different creatures at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. It appeals. I can see how it's very much more appealing to the newer generation of gaming, of gamers who prefer a simpler experience, like rules light, move through it as quickly as possible. I get that. I get that's the modern onus of gaming. It's the direction things are going right now.
Yep.
It's not my personal choice, but I see why that's popular.
Right. And one of the ideas I've around stats and around how to implement stats, and kind of Red went with it in a way. One of the things that I always looked at was wounds and how everyone only had, at least in 2020, right? Wounds were, everyone had the same amount of wounds, right? You had 4 to be light, etc. One idea I was kicking around from a homebrew point of view was to set those categories based upon your body, right? So for a body 10, and granted, I would eliminate BTM because it would be no longer needed. So for example, a person with a body of 6, every threshold would be 6 points, right? Instead of the normal 4. So in order to go from light to serious, it would take 6 points, right, of damage. And again, like I said, I did
that with animals in IU, where in Alok Unlimited, where the larger or smaller the animal, the more wound boxes it had. So like humans had your standard 4, and like medium sized creatures, they had the 4. But once you start like moving up, like a grizzly bear would have 7 or so. I think it was 6, but something like that. So yeah, I get where you're going with that.
But I never actually implemented it. But now how Red does their points kind of reminds me of it. And granted, they kind of simplified the whole wound scale by dividing it in half. And, you know, once you hit the breach of, or hit the level of half your hit points, then you're in serious. And then once you go down below 0, that's when the death saves start coming.
Yep. Hit points. I will not.
Not a fan of hit points?
Not at all.
Yeah.
No, not at all. I was the cyber, how Cyberpunk handled damage and wounds, and that whole mechanic was one of the things that like major draws to me for the Cyberpunk 2020 rule system. It was so lethal. There was so much drama around it. That all seems to have really been stripped away.
I don't know if it's been
about that before, but
stripped away, because your hit points are still based off of your stats. So the more you improve, your hit points aren't changing, right? It's you're not growing in hit points per se.
I get that it's not level based hit points like D&D or 90% of the other games out there, but I very much preferred the idea that, hey, if I get shot in the arm, that has a very specific effect. If I get shot in the leg, that has a very specific effect. And wound tracks differently for each limb or whatever. I preferred that. I still do. I'm going to continue using that. Just a static number of hit points. It's too video gamey for me. It's too Dungeons and Dragons.
Yep.
It is not the direction that I prefer. And I prefer, I understand that others do prefer that. I understand that with the simplification of things, with the streamlining of things that people want in the modern game, that that's the way to go. It's just not the way I go. I say that a lot.
You're setting your ways, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, forlorn dopes. We're two old grognards who are trying to cope and trying to roll with the changes as best we can.
But you got a few fans about not being fans of hit points, so there's still some people out there in the community that like it. The other stat,
The wound tables created such a much more dramatic experience. And that's what it really boils down to is, oh my God, I just got my leg shot out from underneath me. Now I have to crawl to safety. Mm-hmm. And I get that there's like a critical hit table in Red. That's not the same. The critical hits existed in Dungeons and Dragons. They're not the same either. It's not the same as every wound you take having a direct and immediate effect.
Right. So another stat that I think has been homebrewed since the game came out, I think, was the luck stat. And I know I've homebrewed it. Mainly, the reason why I homebrewed the luck stat was because it was starting to become a dump stat, and I didn't really like it. So that's when I created the point value costs to do certain things with luck, right? So like my system is, you know, 1 point you negate a fumble, which in Red has changed, right? So fumbles aren't as bad as they were in 2020, but then again, I think they weren't that bad in 2020. Because everyone's like, well, there's always a 1% chance you fail, and like, or sorry, 10% chance you fail. Well, Red has the same percentage chance that you fail. And actually, no. Red just minuses a d10 off of your roll, so therefore you could still succeed, which is nice. But yeah, so 1 point you could alleviate a failure. 3 points you actually get to re-roll that fumble, because for me, luck is that, right? It talks about the fortunes of battle, and for me, the whole, well, you get to add a point or remove a point for every luck point you have onto a roll. And I didn't see people using luck as much as they possibly could. And oftentimes they, you know, they basically like push.
Forget they've got it.
Yeah, that's the other thing, right? They forget that they have the luck. Whereas, oh Christ, I rolled a one. Let me see if I have luck to change that. Or I have, or this is a really important roll, right? So
yeah. Luck on this roll.
Right. So in my system, 5 points, you basically automatically do a crit success, right? With 5 points. And for me, I knew no one was ever going to put 10 points into their luck. So I knew that I get one crit every game session wasn't always going to be an issue, you know, wasn't necessarily an issue. And players would often use it sparingly, right? I need to succeed at this really, really good, right? It's one of those things in which the players would just think about how important a skill or a role was. Because the other thing was, okay, I also need to keep my luck around to prevent fumbles, right? Or prevent headshots. Because that's always the other thing in the background of dealing with luck. And
yeah,
and again, so like here, you know, there was the off chance you might hit someone's head. So luck always played in my games, played was very valuable because, you know, if you roll a one, okay, you get to use 1 point to change that into body, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say luck is. I've never really had the problem with people using luck as. I'm not gonna say that they don't use luck as a dump stat, but they've still like they use the stat. Mm-hmm. Like we said, important roles. They're like in my game, you have to call luck before you use it, before you roll the dice, and you can use it for anything that dice is rolled on. You can use luck. But yeah, you have to do it before the dice is rolled. So anytime there's an important skill that you just absolutely cannot fumble on, you can call luck, and 1 point eliminates a fumble. It turns it from a fumble into just whatever the die roll is. But with Interlock Unlimited, we went further than that with luck. Whereas with Cyberpunk 2020, like you said, there's a 1 in 10 chance of a fumble. With Interlock Unlimited, if you roll a one, you roll it a second time. And if the second roll is below your skill, it's not a fumble. So the higher your skill, the less chance, the less likely you have of fumbling. So like if you are a highly skilled character, you almost never actually fumble. Whereas if you don't know what you're doing, if you've got like a one in the skill, you're going to fumble most of the time.
Mm.
That you actually roll a fumble. So it works really well for my games. Go ahead.
So the one thing I kind of like didn't like about the luck, and specifically around that, you use your luck before you make the die roll, right? But for me, you know, looking at luck is supposed to make you luckier, right? So if I put 2 points into a die roll and I don't score,
you don't have to claim how much you're going to use before you roll. You just have to claim that you're going to use it and then use 1 point.
Okay. But for Facebook, right? So there was always that concept that you need to declare it before the roll. Well, if for example, I have a 9 in luck, that means I am a super lucky individual in game, right? I'm above average, almost superhuman with a luck of 9, right? So if I say, okay, I'm going to put 2 points into this, or however many points, 5 points, and I fail by 6, okay, well, as a very lucky person, I should still be able to succeed, And yes, I should be able to still use that extra point to bump me over that level. As opposed to, well, you declared it before, you didn't get your success, so guess what? Your luck failed you. And it's like, that's not how luck works. I mean, as a concept.
I mean, isn't it, though?
Is it? Then I'm out of luck. So not only did I fail, but now I'm out of luck. And
I mean, you are just shit out of luck.
Yeah, and I get that. And that's why you have the 9 points. But for me, it's, you know, I don't see it as a before thing. So luck is supposed to influence kind of after the fact, in my opinion, right? I need to make a roll. I rolled, and maybe I have enough luck to bump that as a success, right? Because that's how luck kind of plays. Versus, I'm going.
It's not, though. Luck doesn't just apply to anything you fail at. Luck is random, dude. Luck is like you're walking down the street and suddenly you find some money on the street.
Right, and like, that's different, right?
You're not looking at something when you throw it and you hit the target. Like, that's luck.
But
there's a level of randomness to it.
There is a level of randomness, and the level of randomness of the game mechanics is the dice roll, right? The stat of luck, in my opinion, influences that dice roll more and should be more decisive than it is. By declaring it beforehand, you're not making it very decisive, right, as a luck. And don't get me wrong, so luck for me as a, and this is just applying modifiers to the dice roll for me, right? I also use luck for things like, okay, one of my, and this happens a lot, right, within my games, one of the players decides, hey, I'm going to go head down into this alleyway or start going down into this block by myself, alone, at night. Okay, make a luck roll, right? So, in other words, roll a d10 below your luck, and maybe you don't encounter anything. And it's your current luck. So if you spent luck,
is that,
you know, your luck goes down. So if a player decides, okay.
Does that roll detract from your luck?
No, it's whether or not
the problem I have with that is most of the games I run, unless there's a combat, and there's not, it's very rare that there's going to be a combat every session. But unless there's an actual combat, the amount of times players roll can vary dramatically. Like sometimes a player may only roll like once or twice per session. If it's a very narrative driven, like social interaction type situation. So the luck at that point, the way you're using it would make it almost like impossible to fail at anything.
But your luck runs out. So if I spend,
not if you're only making like a handful of rolls per session. Unless you've got like a really low luck, which again is super possible, but yeah.
But so from a player's point of view, right, I don't know if a combat situation is going to happen because a combat could break out at any time, right? I'm going to try to mitigate that from happening, but that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. And I don't know what's going to happen an hour into the game. Are we going to encounter a boss? I'm going to fail a influence roll, or maybe, you know, they make a bad human perception roll and think we're cops. And they, you know, to me, cyberpunk is always, combat is always a possibility in any session, no matter
what. Sure. It's always a possibility.
So, but a player, right, from a player's point of view, right, I'm not going to want to spend all my luck on a roll. I'm not going to want to change dice rolls too much because I have a limited amount of luck. Okay. And most of my players have an average of 6 to 7 points of luck. Okay. So they're always going to save rolls in case I get a headshot, right? That's the one thing that they try to prevent. Now, and that's how that point system works, right? Is do you need to critically or succeed? Oh, almost guarantee a success within the story. There's always that I need to succeed at this role, and I whatever role it is. I spend my 5 luck, I minus it off my luck stat, and I don't have that much luck for the rest of the game, right? Or the rest of the session. So it's an economic game for them on, well, do I want to spend all my luck because I might get in a firefight, or I might need to apply a success, or so. And again, like you said, there's the possibility that no skill rolls are done, and guess what? Luck isn't used at all because there's no dice rolling, right? And dice are luck, right? So
I get where you're coming from.
So luck influences the dice. Now, the other aspect of luck that I use is not always success or failure with skill rolls or combat, right? The other concept of luck for me is situational, right? So is something bad going to happen? Or if, for example, the player asks a question or like, oh, is there a parked car around, or I need something to be available? Okay, well, make a luck save. And what a luck save is, you roll a d10 and you try to get the number below.
It's in your favor. Yeah.
So you roll a d10 and you try to get below your luck. If you succeed, you succeed, right? And whatever you wanted to happen or whatever you wanted to be there happens. Similar to a player saying, I'm going down into the combat zone by myself at night. Okay, make a luck roll. Make a luck save, is what I call it, to see if you don't get jumped, right? And if you're a single player hanging out in the combat zone and 8 gangers are going to kick your ass and probably kill you, there's that. It helps influence the flow of the game, right? And again, you know, if a player, for whatever reason, decides to use all their luck in the beginning of the session, for whatever reason, and later on they decide to do something or need something based upon luck, I need a contact to be available, I need to get in contact with this person, or I need something, right? That's as a GM, you're not, you don't necessarily want to give it to them.
Yeah.
So you let the dice decide. And to me, luck is that stat that you use to help gauge your decision on what you introduce. And you know, there's a lot of GMs who use luck that way. So there's two aspects to luck. And that's one of the things that kind of makes luck a very interesting stat in the game, is that not only does it affect your dice rolls, but you can also apply it to just in general and how your game flows. And I find, at least for my group, that even though I present them with the luck rules, none of them have ever taken a luck of 10. I think the most I've seen a person take is 8, and that's because the person was new to the whole concept and didn't even think about how many points they wanted to put in. Whereas an old-time player was like, yeah, I'm going to put in 6, you know, just enough to make sure I get that crit and a possible 1 point to avoid a headshot, right? If I need it. And again, the players during sessions don't always necessarily use it. The only times they really use it is if they're in a dire situation where they're like, yes, I need to use luck, right? I need to have a success. This is a critical thing that I need to succeed at, or I need to avoid getting a headshot or avoid this fumble. So
one of the other things I do is I won't normally let a player like just automatically turn something into a critical success, except for in two situations. They can, if they roll a critical, like using luck, you again have to roll a second time, and if you roll under your skill, that's an actual critical. Like right. Rolling under your skill is an actual fumble. Right. And you can use luck to influence that roll. Or if you absolutely, positively have to make this shot, you can expend all your luck on one roll to turn that into a critical success. Now that means you can't have used any luck beforehand. And it uses all your luck for the session, but you can do that one time. Do that one thing.
Right. And that's my thinking around the point cost of doing the various things with luck for me, right? Was the concept of luck being a stat and a representation of how lucky the character is, right? So somebody with a luck of 3, good chance, yeah, fine, you avoid a fumble, right? You avoid a couple fumbles, you avoid a headshot, but you're only going to be doing it three times in a session. So if there's any more rolls, you're out of luck, right? And you're never going to get an automatic success because you have a 3. You're not lucky, you know? Whereas a 5 is kind of average, and yes, once in a while, you do want that critical success. And I use this point system for many, many years, and it's kind of worked. And it doesn't seem too overpowered. It does definitely make the game a little less lethal towards the players, which isn't, to me, a bad thing.
No, it's not.
Because it keeps the game going along, and they're able to succeed and pushing the story around, as opposed to just letting the die lie where it is. And again, that's why I've always been kind of an advocate of use your luck you can use your luck beforehand, you can use your luck after the fact. Except for like the 5 points in which it's an automatic crit, right? So that's kind of like you have to use it. But from a 1-for-1 point value, I don't mind players using it after the fact of letting the dice roll. And then determining, all right, do I really want to waste all my luck on this roll, right? That I need, I have 5 points of luck and I failed it by 7. Well, as a lucky individual, okay, I just wasted all my luck on something that I wasn't going to succeed at, even with the luck of the die, right?
Right.
And that's my kind of concept of the luck stat. And again, it plays, you know, you definitely want to, speaking to all the GMs out there and referees, you know, play around with luck and how you use it.
I mean, I have seen so many different home rules for luck, and some of them are really innovative and fun. Some of them are just like, really? I don't follow what your line of thought, but like, it's one of the most homebrewed things around. And, yeah, play around with it. Find what works for you.
Yeah, and I think that's the only stat that's gotten, like, the most interesting homebrewing around
all
it.
The stats. It's the one that's been homebrewed the most and the one that's been approached from the most interesting angles. Like, you and I are very similar in how we approach luck. We differ on, you know, whether it has to be called first or not. That's a personal taste thing. But, I mean, there's some wildly diverse methods of homebrewing luck.
Yeah, there's one out there with, a luck deck in which you print out the cards?
Yeah, there's a luck deck. There's a pool where, you know, you hand out chits or whatnot to represent luck. Yeah, it's interesting the way people have gone with it. And I mean, they're not all going to work for every group. And you're going to eventually, at some point, you're going to, if you play enough Cyberpunk, regardless of what system you play, you're going to figure out some new innovation that is going to work for your group and your play style. Yeah. And experiment, like, have fun with it. It's one of the stats that you could have fun with without it having too much of an effect on the game.
Yep. The other stat I wanted to get into a little bit, at least, was the move stat. And specifically, I think it's a stat that shouldn't be a stat. I think it should be a derived stat. But one of the things I saw in Interlocked Unlimited was how you use move stat and how the derived stats from there, right? Running, leaping, jumping. You actually implemented or included the ability to have skills influence those numbers, right?
Yeah, so if you have, especially athletics.
Yep. So if you have a higher athletics, it improves your run, it improves your leap and swimming, which I thought was a great idea when I was reading it. Definitely need to play around with the numbers, because 5% of one is a weird.
Well, I mean, I didn't want it to influence it too much.
Right.
Basically, I mean, we're talking increments of distance.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the 5%, it seems like a weird number, but it's not going to come up in actual play that often. But it was there to represent, like, marathon, like professional athletes, like, giving that extra oomph to their long jump or whatnot. Or, like all the rules in Interlock Unlimited, especially all the rules that are changed from regular Interlock, it's there to use or not use as you see fit. Mm-hmm. But I wanted something to represent, like, you know, trained athletes.
So I had actually a suggestion on that. Instead of doing the 5%, because that requires math and rounding and all that craziness.
We hate math and rounding.
Well, for simplicity's sake, right?
Sure, so I was being serious. We do hate math and rounding.
Unless you're a programmer and devising a character sheet to calculate all that stuff for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Other than that, so what you could do, right, because you don't want to just blanketly apply the skill to the move stat and then do all the calculations you're looking for. But if you take your athletic skill level and add it as meters to the run stat, right, which run is, of course, 3 times your move, so you're technically adding 1 to 10 meters on top of the 3 times your move, right? So it's not necessarily, it's almost, I would say, kind of similar to that 5%. And then once you've added that to the run, then you calculate your leap and your swimming based off on your run, you know?
Yeah, that would make quite a bit of difference. The way I've got it, it's not going to make much of a difference. It might give you that nose ahead, even at high levels. It's still not going to be like a ridiculous change in how things are going. I'd have to think about the 1 meter thing, because that would be a significant difference,
right? Well, if you think about a trained athlete versus an untrained person, so, and again, you can't really do it within real life.
I can't say it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, it does make sense.
Of somebody, so somebody who, like, say two individuals start off, they're the same speed, one individual just, it's not very athletic, but, you know, he's still in shape and can still do a move of whatever he's doing, and then the other person starts taking on track and field and trying to improve their athleticism.
That, I actually, damn it, I need to start writing this shit.
What are you talking about? It's all recorded. Just go to YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
An hour, that's true, but I'm 1:30.
Super lazy. An hour 1:30. I'll just write that down.
There you go.
Yeah, I actually think I like your idea. That makes more sense because there is a dramatic difference between a dude who's just really good at running, like naturally, and a dude who's been training his whole life. Like,
yeah. And again, one to 10 meters to a run speed isn't that much.
No, it's really not.
Base move, yes. And I don't think from an athletics point of view, you're necessarily walking. It's hard to say, right? So walking speed versus running speed. And whether someone walks faster if they're a faster runner. So I think that's the only thing that would be interesting is how to convert it back. Right, and whether or not the base move is the base move and athletics just doesn't modify it, but it affects the other attributes. And like even swim skill would improve your swim movement.
Yeah. Yeah, swimming as any movements. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I like it. I'm for this change. Damn it.
Just put me down as an author on your next version.
Oh yeah, no, that's gonna happen.
Yeah. So, anything else on stats? Do we want to talk about?
I think we've covered most of it there.
I mean, intelligence is intelligence. I don't know what else to say about intelligence.
I think there's some overlap in... I don't know. Tech has changed as far as how it's represented from 2020 to Red. In 2020, in Interlock Unlimited, tech is your ability to like manually manipulate things. It's not necessarily hand-eye coordination as much as it is like digital, like small form dexterity. I don't know.
And that's the weird thing about Red, like. Pickpocket in Red is a tech skill.
Yeah, it's a tech skill in 2020.
I know it is, but with the whole concept of dexterity.
Yeah, once you add in dexterity, a lot of the tech skills should get moved to dexterity, like you said. Pickpocket, let me take a look at the skill list here, because
for me, tech is a combination of intelligence and a dexterity, right? To understand how a machine works, where a machine, you want that intelligence, but you also want the dexterity to be able to do what's necessary.
Tech skills are things that I would allow intelligence to replace tech on roles. Yeah. You may know how to like know the theory behind engine repair, but not actually like have the physical dexterity to do it. I guess that's the difference between an engineer and a mechanic.
Right.
Or I also allow like synergistic bonuses to them. Like if you have both a high intelligence and a high tech, you're going to be able to create better crap or make small repairs that small adjustments to what you're doing that are going to have a more desired outcome.
Yep.
Yeah. First aid would be another one of those things that I would put under dexterity.
But it's a blend of dexterity and intelligence. You know, you have to know what to do to whatever, right? So you're going to treat a burn different than a gun wound. So you have to know the difference. And if that bullet's still in the person, that's bad. So I need to make sure that, you know, either I compress it and make sure the stem the blood letting, and even first aid, you could even say is body as well, because you need a bit of strength on some of the things you need to do, right? Like fixing a broken nose or popping.
I guess looking at the checklist for red, pickpocket's really the only one that would need to change to a dex skill. The rest of them are fine as tech. Yeah. Let's see. With Interlock Unlimited, if I were to have a dex skill, I should really trim this skill list down to, there's some stuff that's not necessarily redundant, but not necessarily necessary. Like, maybe I should just have... Stage Magic, I would turn that into a dex-based skill.
So, for those who are listening to us... Wisdom is opening up his PDF and reviewing his skill list within Interlock Unlimited, which you can find at his site at datafortress2020.com. It's a derived rule set based on Cyberpunk 2020. He may be taking some influence from Red. Maybe not everything. Maybe a few things. We'll see.
I may, yeah. That may be a possibility. Or at least from Fusion.
Yeah.
These extended discussions have me thinking about things in new ways and seeing different ways of doing things, of course, always provides inspiration.
Yep.
The goal with Interlock Unlimited has always just been to create the best version of Interlock I can. So...
And that's always a nice goal to set. So I think we've kind of finished up on stats. We kind of compared 2020 to Red to Interlock Unlimited. Hopefully we've given you some things to think about, people. Definitely play out with your homebrew rules on stats and... You know,
and let us know what you come up with. Let us know what you've done. Share your thoughts with us. We might address them in a future episode.
Yep. So you can find me on Discord. I'm Cyber Smiley. I'm on quite a few Discord servers. Or you can message me directly. You can also go to my site, which is cybersmiley.net. There's an email link that I'm always game to read emails and respond to emails. Also, check out my site for all the cyberpunk goodness I presented. Wisdom, you got anything you want to finish up with?
I'm Wisdom 000, otherwise known as Derek Bernier. You can find me on my site, Data Fortress 2020, the largest, most comprehensive cyberpunk 2020 website in the world. You can find me on Discord, on Facebook, on pretty much any of the old school messengers. I never check them anymore, but I'm there. You can get a hold of me via email. I always love talking to people about cyberpunk. If you have any questions or suggestions, by all means, get a hold of one of the other of us, both of us. It all works. You can leave comments on the YouTube channel when this eventually gets posted. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Rob Mulligan for hosting us on Cyberpunk Uncensored.
Yes, here, here. Yeah, and
we will.
Talking to us, we are all ears, and you know, we have no problem with having a discussion about things. Also, you will be able to check this stream out on YouTube over on Cyberpunk Uncensored. And check out all of Cyberpunk Uncensored stuff. He's got a website, cyberpunkuncensored.com. He's got a YouTube channel, this Twitch that you're following now, and a Discord server. So definitely check all of his stuff out. He is a pillar within the Cyberpunk community. So
yeah, what he said.
So future episodes, we're looking to do a little more, you know, game theory, some, hopefully get some additional co-hosts, guests jumping on. We're working on that, and yeah, and just talking about Cyberpunk 2020 and Cyberpunk Red. Yeah. So check us out. We're here every Wednesday. The first and
every Wednesday.
First and third Wednesday of the month. So,
yep.
Some months will be off for 3 weeks, but we're trying to keep up with our normal schedule. So, come check us out. Again, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll check you out next time.
See you in 2 weeks.